There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Colin and Karen. Karen, we're playing a little music for the listeners to start off our show.
Yes, we are.
And they'll find out why in a minute, right?
That's correct.
So we just listen to the tune for a minute?
Sure, and gaze into each other's eyes.
Yeah,
great. Across this giant table.
This bigly table. All right, well, here we are talking about a couple things. I got a little sidetracked there, a little distracted. I think the music threw me off. The Soul of Wealth is a book that was written by a friend of ours, friend of the show, Daniel Crosby. And we also wanted to link that to the Bare Naked Ladies tune, If I Had $1 Million. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Right.
Right. So I think I just stole all of your lines, actually.
That's fine.
But that's pretty funny. Because if you ever wondered what you'd actually do with $1 million besides buying Kraft dinner and fancy ketchups, the book, The Soul of Wealth, is for you.
And I think that this is incredibly timely because I've been having so many conversations with clients, and not to get too far ahead of myself here, but recent conversations about what do you want to do with your legacy? Mm-hmm. And The Soul of Wealth helps to clarify this for people. So yep. I've been suggesting this book, but why don't we first back up and start with the song? The Bare Naked Ladies, they basically spend about 4 minutes daydreaming about what life would look like if they had $1 million. And in that song, if I had $1 million, I'd buy you a house. I'd buy you furniture for your house, maybe a nice Chesterfield or an ottoman.
I was hoping you'd sing that, actually.
Yeah. Nope.
No? Okay. But it's a catchy tune, and it's pretty revealing because even in this lighthearted tune, they're naming exactly what Dr. Daniel Crosby writes about, which is that money isn't just about the number, it's about what it can do for you.
Absolutely. And in his book, The Soul of Wealth, Dr. Crosby challenges us to think beyond accumulation. And he asks the really deep existential question, what is wealth actually for?
Now, before we get into it, Karen, are we recommending Dr. Daniel Crosby's book to people?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a very good book. So this is just, we're just touching the surface here in this episode. And I guess we should call him out in our social media posts when we do go live with this.
Yes.
But there are four core purposes of money that Dr. Crosby identifies. And you hear them all in that song that you mentioned. And the first one is safety. So in the song, they're talking about having a house, some security, a roof over your head, kind of the basics that you need to live, right?
That's correct.
The second one is autonomy. So choosing how to spend, what to buy, and where to live. Mm-hmm. And everybody's version of that is different. Everybody spends their money differently, right?
Very much so.
Then we have mastery, the joy of creating, improving, and experiencing new things, which, of course, is great. And that leads into the last one, which is purpose, which is expressing love, generosity, and meaning, which is kind of like buying your loved one a tree fort in the yard. I have no idea what that reference is all about. But
the song.
I guess it's in the song. Yeah.
But I always used to call it a tree house.
Yeah, tree fort.
Like, where are these guys from? I know they're Canadian, but
from Ontario. I don't know.
So now we're going to have to ask all our friends in Ontario.
They call it tree fort?
Yeah.
Well, they also call cabins cottages, and we call cottages cabins.
Correct.
So, yeah, there is a different Canadiana.
Vernacular.
Yeah. Okay. Where do we go now?
Back to the song. It's not just about, hey, let's pile up all this money. When we think about these four core purposes, it's about how do we actually use the money to live a life that we care about.
Yeah, because, I mean, if we don't define that purpose, it doesn't really matter what the amount is. It could be $1 million or $100 million. But will it ever feel like enough? And I have kind of a funny story about this. I have a neighbor. I won't call out his name because I don't want to, you know, get him in trouble. He decided to build a fence around his lawn. because he got annoyed with dogs going to the bathroom on his grass. And he's putting up this fence, and he's having trouble putting it in the grass for some reason. And he says, this is really hard to do. It's just not working very well. He said, what do you think? And I said, well, I think people spend their money on all kinds of crazy things. But we all spend our money on what, I guess, hopefully brings us happiness.
We did a podcast not too long ago for Mother's Day, I believe. And one of the key messages in there was have enough so that you can build a longer table, not a higher fence.
Yeah. Well, he's building a higher fence. So things are a little weird right now. Lives next door to me. But
Well, let's dig into what the research tells us on this. Because Dr. Crosby points out, he points to a ton of different research around money and happiness. And one specific example is a 2021 study, Matthew Killingsworth, that found that happiness increases with income up to about $75,000 to $100,000 US dollars. But after that, that emotional boost or high levels off.
I can see it. You know, we're fortunate enough to work with some pretty wealthy people, and we're also fortunate enough to work with people that are accumulating their wealth, right? And so we have lots of examples working with different clients, watching them go through that, right? And in Canada, it's no different. UBC research found life satisfaction rises up to around 95,000 Canadian in household income and then plateaus.
Yeah. So even if you had $1 million, you'd eventually adjust. And psychologists call this hedonic adaptation. And we get used to what we have and then we just start wanting more. And I want to mention, I'm doing a number of plans right now. And this is really fascinating to me because, you know, some of the people that we work with, they're fortunate to have annual incomes that $250,000 a year up to $400,000 a year. And that's a lot of money to spend when you don't necessarily have any debts. And when we're doing the retirement planning for them, and they talk about how much they need in retirement, they say, you know, a little less than now. And so the question is always, what do you plan on doing with that money in retirement? Because do you honestly think you're going to spend that much money in retirement? It's a fascinating conversation.
Or my experience has been people spend kind of the same in retirement that they do when they're working, right?
Do you find that?
In the early years of retirement, I do. Maybe in the later years, not so much because there's, you know, people aren't doing extensive travel or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. Everybody's different.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Nope. Yeah. Hedonic adaptation. That's a mouthful, but it's good. So yeah, Dr. Crosby says self-awareness is critical and you have to ask yourself three questions. Where did my beliefs about money come from? What role do I want money to play in my life? And how can I use it to enhance relationships and meaning? Those are pretty big questions.
Those are big questions.
So Karen, where did you find your beliefs of money came from? No, I'm just joking. We don't have to interview.
We should do a podcast on that though, because very often it's, you know, how you grew up around money and how you lived with or without money.
For sure. That's the psychology of it. Yeah.
The psychology of money.
That's another book.
It is.
Who wrote that one? Morgan Housel.
Yes.
Another great book.
Great book. Yeah. Everyone should read that.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Money myths?
Sure. If you think about the lyrics of the song, or Naked Ladies sings, If I Had $1 Million, well, I'd buy you a fur coat, but not a real fur coat, because that's cruel.
Right. So even in a playful song, I just like saying bare naked ladies and the fact that we can just say it because it's their name. They're navigating trade-offs, priorities, and values because, you know, somebody might not want a real fur coat for other reasons, right?
That's right. And Dr. Crosby points out a few big money myths. The first one, more money automatically means less stress. This is a myth because sometimes wealth creates new anxieties. Mm-hmm. And the second one, you'll finally be happy when you hit that next milestone. But in reality, you simply adapt and the goalpost just moves forward again.
Yeah, it's a bit like promising yourself you'll feel complete when you finally buy a nice Reliant automobile. You might smile for a while, but then life gets ordinary again. Actually, I experienced that. I bought a little sports car years ago, and I thought, oh man, this is going to bring me so much happiness. And it just became something to look after, and I sold it. It just wasn't my thing.
It did not bring you joy.
like for 10 minutes, it brought me joy.
Right.
Yeah. And then it was just a thing to wash.
And I do find it's interesting that we're discussing the bare naked ladies. Mm-hmm. Say it again.
Yeah. Bare naked ladies.
Yep. Because they went through many trials and tribulations themselves once they hit a certain level of stardom and made a lot of money, and some of their lifestyles went off course. Do they still produce songs?
Actually, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the story. Right. You know, we'll have to maybe put that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. We don't have show notes. But
well, if we do talk to them, I really need to get to the bottom of this tree fort.
The sense. Tree fort, yeah, yeah. All right, segment five, tying it back to real financial planning.
Yeah, so how do we use these ideas in practice? Because Dr. Crosby argues that money should serve the four purposes that you talked about: safety, autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
I suppose that could mean things like building an emergency fund for safety. It could mean paying down debt to increase autonomy. It could be investing in education and experiences to build mastery, or even supporting causes or people you love to find purpose.
And there's a lot of things that we can do in financial planning that actually help to create some shape and structure around these four purposes.
Well, don't you find that just having the conversation gets people thinking about those things, right? Like, how many times have we gone into meetings now doing mind mapping, identifying things that, you know, people come in, they want to talk about rate of return or asset allocation. And instead we're talking about, well, what are your values? What are your interests? What are your goals, right?
Who are the most important people in your life?
Yeah. How do you want to protect them?
Right.
What do you want their life to be like?
What do you envision that to look like?
Mm-hmm. And this could be any range of socioeconomic, is that a word?
It is.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
Just pulled that one right out of my back pocket. Person, you know, it doesn't mean the people that have the tens and tens of millions of dollars, but even those people, I remember meeting with a very wealthy client, and they're going to leave a very big estate to their two kids. And we had a very philosophical discussion about, do you really want to leave your kids that much? I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a whole other part of stress about having a lot of money.
Well, I can tell you this right now. I'm doing a lot of studying right now on wills and estates and a number of questions that come up when it comes to planning that. And if you have any type of strife or value disagreements with the people that you intend to leave money to or be guardians of your children or own your assets and trust them to distribute it in a fair and equitable manner,
yeah,
that whole thought process of, do I still want to have this person in my will? And do I still believe that they are the right person to pass on my legacy to others? It's really, I get stressed when I'm reading this stuff because they have a number of different cases, law cases, et cetera, that goes into this information. And it is distressing. And that's what I love about our job, is we can help clear away some of that fog, some of the emotion behind it, because it's not an easy discussion to have.
No, it's, you can get pretty deep with this stuff, you know. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel like the job actually is more counseling than trading stocks, for example. Mm-hmm. Of course, the basis of our job is to manage money, but the deeper part is, and for what? Mm-hmm. For what reason? You know, it's not just about that rate of return or price earnings ratios, EBITDA to cash flow, or whatever other acronym people throw at you. It has to have a reason, right?
It does.
Yeah. So what do you say to, I know you have a couple of clients that are, maybe they don't have families and they've accumulated a fair bit of wealth and maybe they're lacking some direction and purpose. How do you have that conversation with those people?
Well, interesting that you ask me this and that we're talking about Dr. Crosby's book, because with one of these clients, and, you know, there is family, it's extended family, so it's not, you know, having sons and daughters or grandkids, but there's a lot of confusion around where that money should go. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up buying her this book and sending it to her. And I said, I believe that if you read this and give it some introspection, you'll be able to find the answers you're seeking.
And her response was?
Well,
you know, you don't have to go there. Yeah. Let's just say she
didn't like the first chapter. And so I encouraged her to pick any chapter and just continue reading, because let's face it, these questions are deep and they can be existential and they can cause a lot of emotional turbulence. And sometimes you just need to lean into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And you wouldn't want to trade your problems for anybody else's is another thing, right? So, yeah, and that can be, again, any stage of where people fall in the economic factor of our society. But we have to, I guess, get back to data. So one more data point to talk about from the book is that we have to anchor some of these things in numbers.
Yep.
And there's a lot of talk about things like stock picking or whatever. Like I found as a younger person in this role, our job, I thought, was to pick stocks. And what I've found as I've been doing this job a long time, our job is not to pick stocks, because picking stocks is a very hard thing to do. And anybody that hasn't listened to the show before knows that we don't believe it adds much value.
Right.
So instead, we want to do things like focus on the variability of portfolios that are linked to those same goals we just talked about. You know, why do you want to have this money? What are you going to do with it? But then how are you going to protect it? And something like, and there's been tons of research on this, over 90% of your portfolio's variance or variability comes simply from your asset allocations, not picking the flashiest investments.
Right. Set it and forget it. And if you do that right, you'll get rid of a lot of the noise, because it's not about chasing the next hot stock. Hey, we've been there. I think all of us in this office experienced a time in the industry where we were encouraged to sell certain stocks and it didn't always turn out great for anyone involved. So what we do now is it's all about building a solid plan that funds our clients' vision of a good life.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't want that?
I think we all want that.
So what you're saying is that it's about something else, right? So if we look at how markets have returned, because I guess a lot of the short-term emphasis is on like that flashy stock or that flashy name, that topical item, whatever it is right now. But you got to go back and look back over rolling periods. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in the U.S., the S&P 500 has never posted a negative return over a 20-year period. But it can definitely post negative returns in a 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, right?
Yes.
Even 10 years. There was a lost decade. It was 2000 to 2009, I think it's called the lost decade. So there's been dozens of corrections in bear markets, but I guess just staying invested will take care of most of that.
Right, and that's why a very large foundation of what we do is understanding the goals and the time horizon so that we can help our clients make those choices as to weighing out the risks versus the return. Because as we know, it's not just about time in the markets. It's also about how we sleep at night and what we're trying to achieve. And you know, you talked about S&P returns. And what are the numbers? I think over the past 100 years, 76 of those years have posted positive returns. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's 74, and 26 of those years have been negative.
Yeah.
And it's just time in the markets. So
yep.
No matter how much money you start with, it's that discipline and purpose. Those two matter more than the headlines.
Yeah, and that is written extensively in this book as well as other books from the people that we align ourselves with, like Dr. Crosby, like Morgan Housel, who wrote The Psychology of Money. It's just, there's some basic fundamentals, right?
Did you say Psychology of Money?
Did I? Psychology? Yes, I was studying the Psychology of Money. Saying this is, it's never been like this before. It's amazingly bigly. The point is that the emphasis is on the shiny object, but the vision should be on the whatever the long-term plan is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Absolutely. What Dr. Crosby talks about. So, okay, what about the takeaways and a call to action from the book and others?
Well, first I want to ask if anyone has the song in their head, If I Had $1 Million.
Yes.
And when you do, really listen to the words, because truly think that if you had that money, number one, what would you do with it? Number two, would it actually make you happier? And then the third one that I want folks to think about is, how could you use that money to create safety, autonomy, mastery, and purpose?
So I have the Schology of safety. Yeah, no, that's, those are good questions. How do you use to create safety, autonomy, mastery, and purpose? And, you know, even in our team, we've got our own, you know, vision statement, mission statement, those types of things, internal discussions about creating mastery, autonomy, and purpose.
We do.
We talk about working with clients to help them achieve whatever's important to them that requires planning, money, and time, right? And, you know, getting a 12% rate of return is great, but what does it matter? What does it mean, right?
Right.
Yeah, because the soul of wealth isn't about owning the nicest fur coat or even the fanciest tree fort. It's about funding a life that feels whole and complete.
Right. So if you have not yet read The Soul of Wealth by Dr. Daniel Crosby, pick it up. It's 50 short chapters, and it's thoughtful, it's funny, and it's genuinely useful.
Yes, and it's a much better read than Wealth of Nations, which is 750 pages long that I would recommend nobody ever read. Just get the highlights. But The Soul of Wealth is great. Actually, I'm just rereading some of the chapters right now.
Good.
Yeah, and don't ask me to comment on any of them because I can't think of them on the fly. But
I do want to know why you picked it up again.
You know, I have the same thing you have. Is it called a Kindle Scribe?
Yes.
Okay. And you go through and you can highlight certain sections that sort of ring true to you. And that's what I did the first time I read it. And then one day I was going through the section where it just aggregates all of the parts that you highlighted. And I just wanted to go back and reread some of those sections. And I had a really good conversation about this with my wife just yesterday, because she was talking about some family members that might spend a lot of money on things. They're maybe
your kids.
I won't say which family members. I won't say in which order, but perhaps they focus on buying things.
Right.
And we were talking about, well, is the focus on buying the thing, or is that just refocusing away from some other issues that they just don't want to address? And it's just easier to go and buy a new fur coat. Can you even buy fur coats anymore?
Well, you can, but you might get some paint splashed on you as you walk out the door.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so what is the focus there? And listen, I'm not against buying nice things. I like to have some nice things, but I'm also trying to be aware of being conscious of what I'm spending my money on. And is it just like to fill a void in the moment, or is it a need and I've done some proper due diligence and research on what's actually going to work for me?
And, or are you finally fulfilling that ability to spend without guilt because you've worked so hard?
Well, yeah, sometimes, yeah, that's a tough one to overcome,
it
for
is.
Sure. You know, because even Dr. Crosby himself drives, I think, like a 15-year-old car.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's doing well enough that he could probably buy any car that he really wanted to buy.
Right.
So he's got his own stuff going on.
Well, I think he talked about that in the podcast that we did with him.
Yeah.
Because then you have to like park at the furthest edge of the parking lot so that no one dings your car.
Yeah. Yeah. It creates other issues that you don't think about. Anyways, it's a fascinating area, this cross section between psychology and money. And I know there's a lot of emphasis in this area. We put a lot of emphasis in this area about just asking why. Right? Like, mm-hmm. why are you invested that way?
Right.
Why do you think you need X amount of dollars? Right. What's your vision? I mean, those are big questions.
They are big questions, and they don't always have an immediate answer. Sometimes you got to peel back the layers of the onion to really get to the root of it all. Mm-hmm. And I will say, because when you mentioned that you had picked it up and were rereading it, I remember when I was initially reading it in advance of the podcast interview that we did with Dr. Daniel Crosby. And I recognize that there was also a couple of chapters that didn't really jive with me. So mm-hmm. I think if you do pick up the book, it's okay not to love every single chapter, because there's 50 of them and each one has a very significant point. So I would encourage anyone to pick it up or reread it if they have it, because there's gold in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's probably it for today. So if you enjoyed this episode, Share it with someone who hums Bare Naked Ladies every time they look at their bank balance. And don't forget to subscribe to this show. Leave us a review. We always like a good review. What else can I say?
I'm just going to say that wealth is a tool. It's not the destination.
Ooh, very powerful. And a little song to finish us off.
Getting ready for Stampede.
Yeah, it's, well, you can't say that because then people know when we recorded.
Darn it.
Okay, till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.